Avoiding your unfinished home projects because you're not sure where to start? Thumbtack knows homes, so you don't have to. Don't know the difference between matte paint finish and satin? Or what that clunking sound from your dryer is? With Thumbtack, you don't have to be a home pro. You just have to hire one. You can hire top-rated pros, see price estimates, and read reviews, all on the app. Download today.
Going up.
Prices keep going up these days. It feels like being on an elevator that only goes up.
Going up.
But not at Metro. We're pushing the down button.
Going down.
We lowered prices and give you a 5-year price guarantee on talk, text, and data. Get one line of 5G data for $40, period. That's 20% lower. Only at Metro.
5-year guarantee on eligible plans. Exclusions apply. See website for details. Not available at Metro with T-Mobile in the past 6 months. Tax applies.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.
Jeff Calkins is columnist of the Daily Memphian, also hosts the Jeff Calkins Show 9 to 11 every single weekday right here at 92.9 FM ESPN on X at Jeff_Calkins. Jeff, how's it going?
I'm good, although I wish the game and the draft were not. I'd like to be two places at one time. I'd rather get the game and the draft were not happening both tonight, if you want to know the truth.
All right. Now, I know we're in Memphis, but what's at the top of your at the top of your watch list, though?
I mean, I'm going to the game, and I'm covering the game.
If you were sitting at home on your butt with one TV in front of you, what's getting a majority of the air?
Those are pretty easy to flip back and forth between, okay. Right? Those are pretty easy to flip back and forth between. And I'll be honest, the way the Grizzlies-Thunder games have gone, I mean, I turned over. I think it was 8-0 when I turned it. I just couldn't watch. Like, watching the Grizzlies miss shot after shot, that was excruciating, the beginning of that last game. So I turned away pretty quickly. Then I came back when I saw that at least scored. And so I sort of flip anyway because I've been watching this sort of metaphorically through my fingers as the Grizzlies have been getting destroyed by OKC. And the truth of the matter is, with the NFL draft, I like the whole NFL draft. I enjoy the whole goofiness of it and the whatever suspense there is. But as a Bills fan, they don't draft till 30. So I can actually wait out quite a lot of the draft before it gets super interesting to me.
Yeah,
you know, in terms of, you know, relevant to the Bills.
So Connor and I, and I think all of us on 92.9 had this sort of come to Jesus moment when we're trying to break down the Grizzlies and Thunder, the series, game three, game two, whatever you're trying to break down. You come to this point where you're, okay, what do the Grizzlies need to do to win the game? And you say, okay, well, the big three need to have 20. John needs to have 30.
Yeah.
You know, the bench, they're going to have to step up. You're going to have to get Luke Kennard back going. You're going to all this. And then you also come to the realization, well, you know, defensively, the perimeter defense has to be a whole lot better. So you come to this realization with the Grizzlies in this matchup versus the Oklahoma City Thunder that the Grizzlies can't be the Grizzlies that we know. They have to be somebody different completely to steal a game at all, to make this series a 5-game series, a 6-game series. They can't be themselves if they want to win a game.
Yeah, I think the simplest thing is they have to hit a bunch of three-pointers, right? And Oklahoma City has to miss a bunch of three-pointers. Like, there has to be
So you're saying each team has to not be themselves.
Each team has to not be themselves. I honestly, like, when you're asking me what I really do want out of the series now, is I want competitive. I particularly want, what I most want is a super competitive game tonight.
Yes.
Because if you have a super, if you have a blowout tonight, then Saturday's truly like, what the hell is that? You know? So I mostly just want a super competitive game tonight. Because I was no under illusions they would win the series from the moment of the series.
Sure.
You know, existed. So none of us were, right? So, and at this point, yeah, sure. Would be nice if they win a game, but it's 10 straight now. I don't, you know, that almost seems like too much to ask. I just want the avalanche of negativity around the team and both nationally and locally to be stopped a little bit, to slowed a little bit. Because I do think that while this series has, you know, shown a spotlight on, you know, some of the issues the team has, I also think we now think the team is worse than it actually is.
Yes, 100%. I think the problems that the Grizzlies have are already big, but they seem bigger when they're playing the Oklahoma City Thunder.
People tend to now nationally and locally think this is a trash team. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
It's not a trash team. It's a team that won 48 games, even though Ja only played about half of them, and even though they were starting two rookies. You know, so I don't advocate them running it back. I don't think there's any chance they will, quote-unquote, running back. I don't know anyone who thinks they will, quote-unquote, run it back. But I think if they did, I would predict that team would win, you know, another 48 to 50 games. You know, like, even if they did, run it back exactly as it is, which they won't do, and no one is arguing for them to do that, right? No one is arguing for them to do that. But I'm just saying the team that they had this year with two rookies and half of a Ja Morant won 48 games. So if you ran that exact team back, it is certainly a upper third of the league team. You know, it's certainly a 45-win team. Why would it be worse? Why would it be worse next year? It wouldn't be if you ran it back. I'm not suggesting they run it back. I'm just saying that what we think they are now is a wildly exaggerated to the negative side of what they actually are, which is still a pretty good team that's just – missing two players and wildly overmatched, even if they weren't missing those two players against this particular team.
If they ran it back exactly as is, do you think they'd be a playoff team next year in the Western Conference?
I think they'd be a borderline playoff team. You know, like in the end,
another play-in, you know, is what you're saying, basically.
Yeah, they would, but it also would depend what happened around them. You know, who's suffering injuries, who's not suffering injuries, whatever else. So, I think they'd be in the mix, just like they're in the mix this year. That's what they'd be in the mix, you know. I mean, I think they're on the same tier of team as Minnesota, right? And hell, they were two games worse than Minnesota this year? They were two games worse than Minnesota, and they won the season series. All of a sudden, we think Minnesota's awesome, and the Grizzlies are trash. They're in the same tier of team as Minnesota. You can argue that Minnesota's better. Clearly, Ant is the best player now, very clearly, of those two teams. But they're in the same tier. It's just because they're playing Oklahoma City that we think they're trash. They're not trash. And I think we're getting an exaggerated sense of how bad they are. That's all.
And the other part of it is it's very frustrating to think how much they could have controlled this. And we talked about this on Tuesday. You drop from 2 to 8. You only have yourself to blame for the situation that you're in right this second. And all of the criticisms and hyper-inflated views of them being trash that you're talking about. You only have yourself to blame.
No, 100%. And all the things that everyone was saying early in the season, why the hell are you losing these games that you don't have to lose, bit you in the ass. It turned out everyone was right, and you, the organization, were wrong. I mean, it's just true. You know, like, those of us who were screaming, why the hell are the Grizzlies only playing 31 minutes a game when everyone else is playing 36 minutes, whatever, their best players? Why the hell are you, you know, sitting your best players against these teams and these teams? Why isn't there a greater sense of urgency and settling into rotations and all these things? Why aren't we treating these games like they actually matter, that you win them? It turns out all of us who were saying those things, sometimes you can disparage talk radio talk as, you know, blah, 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 blah. Nope. Talk radio was right because these were wrong. And that's just true. And and you're seeing it. They did this 100% to themselves.
Yeah. Now, Jeff, can I have you put on your NFL draft analyst hat at least for the rest of this conversation?
Yeah.
All right,
please.
let's go ahead and hop into it. Let's do this.
Yeah.
Shedeur Sanders. We know that there's been all the anonymous sort of quotes about him from NFL assistants. He's this, he's that, he's too entitled, don't like his attitude. What do you think of Shedeur Sanders, the quarterback, and do you think all of these things that have been said about his attitude, do you think it has actually affected his draft status? I'm very curious about that.
First of all, I heard you talk about this yesterday, and the interesting thing to me is I went back and I read the Tom Pelissero piece, right? If you go read the Tom Pelissero piece, I find remarkable about it is that there was, you know, maybe 40 comments about him.
How good he was.
Half of them were about how good he was, you know, and then half of them were he was trash, right? And if you go read the Jackson Dart comments, It's roughly the same thing. Half about how good he, you know, a bunch of them are how good he was. And a bunch, it wasn't just this. I still was under the impression there's this one story from this one analyst saying that he was. No. In the same story, there's a quote about how he has more wow throws than any other quarterback in the draft. Another person is saying that. It's a collection of comments. It's not like they went out of their way to smear this one guy. I mean, literally, they're calling Jackson Dart a knucklehead and his. I mean, they're talking about you. Poor read Seth Hennigan, read his comments. You feel like he's me. He's so unathletic. If you read his comments, you feel like, oh my God, I'm surprised the guy can get off the couch. So I don't think it was just now. Do I think it has affected his draft status?
Right.
Yes.
Okay.
I think two things have probably affected his draft status. He doesn't have overwhelming physical tools, right? And then, I mean, like why is Josh Allen? A, he has overwhelming physical tools, and it turns out then in addition, you got a guy who went to the NFL and was totally willing to do whatever Brian Daboll told him to and learn and, you know, grind and all those things and do exactly what he said and, you know, all of that. So it's the mindset. And so if you have the tools and the mindset, seem to me the two biggest things for a quarterback. He doesn't really have the tools, and I think people worry about the mindset, right? They worry about, okay, we know he's always done this with his dad, where he's always been out. What is he going to be like in a different setting? And so, you know, is it a double standard? Like, is it to the Mannings? Are the Mannings treated like that? Because he grew up in a, you know, rich, successful family? No, they aren't. But, you know, I do think those two things are hurting him. And I think, I guess at this point, and Jeffrey made this point, it's weird that this has become the Shedeur Sanders draft. Can you think of a draft that is sort of the draft about a single person and we have no idea where they're going?
Oh,
Johnny Manziel, maybe?
Johnny Manziel was, yeah, that was, that's a good one. Tim Tebow. There we go. There's another.
Yeah, no, you're right. Johnny Manziel, same thing. Didn't have overwhelming physical tools, and people wondered about his mindset, right? And so
different wonders, I think, about the mindset with Johnny Manziel. Yeah. But I get the parallels you're drawing there. I get it.
Yeah. Oh yeah, they're totally different ones. Yes, absolutely right. But they are. So I don't know. I'll be interested. It won't surprise me now if he goes. Here's what I believe. I do believe he'll probably go in the first round because I think there are. The only trades that I absolutely expect is I expect one of these teams that doesn't pick a quarterback early to trade up late in the first and take, you know, one or two of those quarterbacks. So yeah. Jackson Dart, and if Shedeur Sanders doesn't go early, I think someone will trade back up and get him. So I bet both those quarterbacks go in the first round, and it won't surprise me if it's not the Steelers that it's some team, Cleveland, the Giants, whoever didn't get a quarterback on the first go round, Raiders, someone jumps back in and takes those quarterbacks late in the first round.
Jeff, I want to highlight the first part you said about Shedeur Sanders because I think we missed the point a lot with it. Because I'm not sort of bought into the idea that, oh, he's entitled and he's arrogant, right. So that's making him drop down boards. Because to be honest with you, this is what I've always said. What did we expect from Deion Sanders' kid?
Right.
Like,
right.
Of course he's got some arrogance, right, and entitlement. It's of
that,
course.
Doesn't that worry you a little bit, though?
Not really. But the right. First part of what you said is the most important part.
Right.
He doesn't have the physical tools. He doesn't have a rocket arm. He's not running a 4.6. Because I can tell you, let's rewind to last year's draft. Who was the number one overall pick? Caleb Williams. We're not similar things were said about his character, but guess what?
The physical tools
were there. They were present. He could run his ass off. He had the rocket arm. He could make plays off platform. He was a Heisman winner. So, like, as much as we sit here and try to dig through character, I don't think it matters in the grand scheme of things. I think what matters with Shedeur Sanders, the prospect, and why he may be falling down boards, if that's how you view it, is his actual skill set. In the end of the day, if he had a better skill set and those character problems were still there, he still may go number one overall. Look at Caleb Williams. I find it interesting.
I 100% agree with that. If he had the rocket arm, he would go one or two no matter what, whatever the mindset. But I do think once you then have a guy who doesn't have that, I think the other stuff, say, and he doesn't have this other stuff. And so I think it, I think the attitude stuff, whatever it is, comes into play partly because you don't have it, you know, it isn't obscured by the physical tools. And I guess that's, you know, there are quarterbacks who didn't have great physical tools who are drafted, you know, who are drafted in the first round. I mean, go back as far as Steve freaking Walsh, you know, you know, there are guys who aren't rocket armed guys who go, they tend to be the yes, sir types, you know, yeah. Who go. So I don't know. It does make it for an interesting, yeah. And then it does. The other thing that's happened is it feels like there's all of a sudden all this stuff about, oh, are the Browns going to trade out? Yeah. And, you know, there's all sorts of fresh rumors that have popped up today, adding a little intrigue. I suspect it'll be chalk at the top.
Yeah, I'm expecting Cam Ward, Travis Hunter, Abdul Carter. Then we sort of start from there and see what happens. And I'm almost convinced Will Campbell from LSU at number four to the Patriots, and then
how
we would start at number five.
By the way, how long are your arms?
I was measured at the NFLPA Collegiate Bowl after my senior year at, I believe, 32 and a quarter. So very short. That was a big knock against me. Huge knock.
Really? Short on. And do you believe, I can ask you now that I know that you're a short arm.
Absolutely. I love this question you're about to ask.
Did it impair your ability to get the job done?
Not on the inside, did on the outside, 100%. When I had to play right tackle and left tackle, that was a big issue. When I had to go against Kansas.
It was your arms?
Yes, mostly arms and reach and getting my hands into the chest of a defender. Because, like, for example, let's go to the Kansas game my junior year. I'm facing Dorrance Armstrong. If you know anything about Dorrance Armstrong, really big, 6'5", 250 pounds at the time. Edge rusher, played for the Cowboys, plays for the Cowboys, really good, you know, a third down edge rusher guy for him. He probably has 34-inch arms. So one of the big, you know, things that you have to do as an offensive lineman is I have to get inside hands and establish inside arm presence and get my hands on that D lineman quicker than he gets his hands on me. So if I ever lose that battle, I'm losing the rep. Whereas if you have 34-inch arms and you're a defensive end, if I get my hands on you and they're 32 and a quarter-inch arms, you still have 34-inch arms to create space and potentially go win that rep. So you're at a disadvantage. It doesn't mean you can't be good. Will Campbell, I think, is very good.
Before he gets you get to him, or is because
yes, there's an inherent
once you're engaged, he can push off.
There's an inherent advantage. It's twofold, like you just said. One, if you get your hands on me and you have 34-inch arms, you're winning that rep every time, just about every time, because I can't reach your body. If I get my hands on you and you have 34-inch arms, you can then knock my hands off and create space better than I ever can because I have 32-inch arms. So it's twofold. It's just an inherent advantage when you're dealing with edge rushers.
A lot of us, whatever, we hear about, oh, Will Campbell has short arms, and we roll our eyes. But that's a real thing.
It is absolutely. It's a real thing to an extent because there are some guys that are just so damn good with their feet and so talented on the edge that they can make some things happen regardless. I look at a guy like Rashawn Slater from the Los Angeles Chargers. He's 6'4" and has 33-inch arms. He's still damn good in pass protection because he's just so technically sound. But he has to overcome the arm length advantage that he's dealing with a lot of his opponents. So it does matter, but if you are just that inherently good at your craft, you can get over it. And I think Will Campbell, to where this conversation began, I think he is good enough to get by. But a lot of these guys could kick inside. I don't know. I mean, there's a lot of – I mean, that's Kelvin Banks Jr., him, Armon Mimbu, the guy from Mizzou, all of them are potentially guys that could kick inside. What do you want to see the Bills do, by the way, at 30?
You know, it was funny because I was listening to Buffalo Radio today. I mean, in the end, one of the things that does irritate me is they always say they take best player available, and yet if you look at the Bills' draft over the whatever, they're 100% drafting for need. I mean, 100%. Yeah. It's always if they need a corner, they take a corner. What you want is you want a player who's a top 100 player in the league. You know, like you want a a different, like, who do the Bills have on the defensive side who's a difference maker? And the answer is maybe Ed Oliver on a good day, you know? Mm-hmm. Maybe, you know, there's not many, right? And so people were talking about Malachi Starks, the safety from Georgia.
Like him.
And safeties are sort of whatever. The Bills don't really 100% need a safety as much as they need a corner or a one tech or whatever. And so, but like in the end, you want a playmaker. You know, and the good thing is that, and it used to be like this with the Grizzlies, it's no longer as much so. It used to be like if you have a good organization, I just kind of trust what they do. Right now, my trust was shaken last year when they made the trade with the Chiefs a little bit. So the Chiefs get the fastest guy in the NFL again. That shook my faith a little bit. Fundamentally, the Bills have a very good front office, and I'll just talk myself into whatever they do.
Yeah.
In the same way that I once did with the Grizzlies, and I'm a little more shaken now in terms of my belief in the Grizzlies front office. But it's comforting when you know that. You know, it used to be with the Grizzlies back in the day that we just assumed whoever they drafted was going to be garbage. And that was...
Want to pull off the season's freshest trends? You just need the right shoes. That's where Designer Shoe Warehouse comes in. Loving wide-leg jeans? Pair them with sleek, low-profile sneakers. Obsessed with the sheer trend? Try it with mesh flats. Feeling boho? Comfy sandals nail the whole free-spirited thing. Find on-trend shoes from the brands you love, like Birkenstock, Nike, Adidas, and more at DSW.
Today's podcast is sponsored by Midi Health. At any given time, 61% of adult women say they want to lose weight. But for many, that's easier said than done. If you've had trouble losing weight, don't lose hope. Midi Health uses a deep understanding of women's hormones and a combination of weight loss medications to create a customized plan for each user. Midi Health can help you achieve more effective and sustainable weight loss by addressing hormone imbalances. Midi can also prescribe proven weight loss medications that help you experience reduced appetite and increased feelings of fullness. When paired with hormone optimization, you're not just managing your weight, you're also supporting your body's natural processes, which means you can overcome those weight loss plateaus that in the past have been so difficult to move beyond. So if you're ready to combine the power of hormones with the power of weight loss medications, visit joinmidi.com today. Discover how this innovative approach can lead you to lasting success. That's joinmidi.com.
Anyone who loves playing baseball or softball knows that one of the first steps in that journey is breaking in your first glove. It's where your love of the game began. Where does your child's baseball or softball journey begin? Go to playball.org to get started. Major League Baseball trademarks used with permission.
Every morning brings a fresh new energy.
This is Today.
And no matter what the day holds, we come to the Today Show for all of it.
When things are tough, we talk about it. When there's something to figure out, we dig into it. And when there's joy, we celebrate it.
Because today is where it's all happening. We get the best start to every morning because we start it together.
Watch the Today Show with Savannah Guthrie and Craig Melvin weekdays at 7 a.m. on NBC.
Too bad. So it's better now, and I have faith fundamentally.
You need to school me on this because you listen to Buffalo Radio. You're following the Bills year-round. I look at their roster, and obviously I know Josh Allen's the reigning MVP and all that, but why has there not been like this – I don't know. It feels like there's not any – sense of urgency to try to get the wide receiver room better. And I understand Khalil Shakir just got paid. Keon Coleman's still young. All those things remain true. But why is there not that push to say, okay, let's go get a talented wide receiver, see what he can do to help Josh Allen? Is it because, okay, we were in the AFC Championship even though he didn't have wide receiver talent, or is it something else?
I mean, they made a trade last year for an experienced wide receiver.
I get it.
And so they made an effort. The truth of the matter is, I really think this is what happens. They look at the bill. They look at what happened last year. They had literally one of the best offenses in the NFL, the best offenses they've ever had. I don't know. I don't off the top of my head know where they ranked, how many points they scored.
It got them to the AFC Championship.
I think they literally had the best offense, and it was the no Stephon Diggs, everybody eats, and Josh Allen was so awesome it didn't matter. And I think in I think the general sense in Buffalo is, you know what happened? We have a defense that's very good in the regular season. It's a little bit like the Grizzlies, right? We can beat people in the regular season, but when you go up against elite teams, they don't stop people. You know, like in the end, the problem in the playoffs has not been that they don't score enough points. It's they don't get stops. They don't get stops. I mean, they did against the Ravens because of the turnovers, but they don't get stops when they play the Chiefs. And I think there's a real sense that, you know, you look at what the Eagles did and you're able to get, you know, you're able to harass Mahomes and get them on the ground and everything else. And the Bills just don't have difference makers on defense. So it's not that they wouldn't want a number one receiver. I don't think there is a feeling that there is a number one receiver in the draft this year, period, except for Travis Hunter. And so what they really, I think the sense is, what their priority should be for the Bills is to have some kind of difference maker on defense because there's nobody you have to scheme for on that side of the ball.
Okay. All right, now final thing, Doug McDaniel commits to the University of Memphis. Last time we caught up, I don't even think they had their big. So right. Aaron Bradshaw also committed. This came together pretty quickly and pretty nicely for Penny Hardaway, and if he can get that Dane Danger waiver, it could be even better.
Well, that would change completely how I feel about the thing. Like, Dane Danger was awesome down the stretch. I just don't think, as you're looking at this, and I don't know. I just know sort of what I hear is everyone seems skeptical that Dane Danger is going to get a waiver, right? Sure. And so if you take this roster apart from that and you assume no Dane Danger, seems like you could win the AAC.
Yeah.
But I mean, it's you know, it would just look better with PJ Hagerty on it. You know what I mean? Like, it does it feel like it's a roster that could do in a non-conference schedule what last year's roster did? You know, like it that's the problem. Is that? And it's just interesting. I think some of it's just perspective. When you hear Ed Scott talk about the money that they have, and he says, listen, we've got the best group of five money. We're going to have the best group of five money that there will be, or it will certainly be right there. And then in terms of power four teams, we'll be in the 50th percentile. That's what he said. And that's pretty damn impressive for a non-power four program to be in the 50th percentile. But, and for Memphis football, that seems all pretty good, right? But for Memphis basketball, where you have always aspired to be, you know, competing for national titles, Final Fours, whatever, it just feels like, you know, I don't know. I how did you feel about those quotes? Are those exciting quotes, or are those just that's reality quotes?
I think it's that's reality. That's reality quotes to me. Because you know we've had this sort of pitting of basketball and football against each other. No. But that's a reality of where we've been at least the past month with this conversation. I just think it's reality. I also think that like there's. Until you get into a better conference, you're just not the national championship aspirations getting past that, getting there. I don't think you can get there in your current conference. I just don't think it's a possibility. I hate to do that. I hate to say it that way, but I think that's the reality.
That expectations for the Memphis Tiger basketball program, what it can be, should be reduced. Should be lowered from what it historically has been. They are no longer realistic expectations given their current economic reality.
Absolutely, 100%, Jeff.
That's a
no
hard
doubt.
Thing to say. That's a hard thing to say.
But do you okay? Deep down, do you not feel similarly?
Oh no, I do. I think it is. I think it's a. But that's given what Memphis basketball has meant historically. And the truth of the matter is, it's been trending that way for a while. Like it used to be. I used to do the math, and I'd say. You know what? Memphis should go to Sweet 16 every 4 years because that's what they've done. And there was a time not so long ago where if you just looked at like clockwork, every 4 years, that's what they would have done. That is not what they have done lately, even before we have these new economic changes, right? And so it's already been trending that way. It's just when this program has been built as a certain, has a tradition, has been built as a certain type of program, and it's now a different type of program.
Reduced.
There's a wistfulness to that, you know. There's a, you know, it's not quite like DePaul, which once was awesome and is now totally irrelevant, But it's there's a sadness to it, right? But then it's interesting, though. Then you just look up, and all of a sudden St. John's is killing it, right? Just killing it in the portal. Right. And I don't know. I haven't looked to see what the economic realities are there.
I do know this. They have no competition with any other program.
They have no competition internally with any other program. And there may be some rich dude who's like,
That is true.
I think Patino. There is.
I've heard he's got somebody that funds him. So that helps. And I don't think it's all St. John's related that helps Rick Pitino.
Well,
Rick Pitino
isn't in the SEC, and yet you're capable of doing it outside of a Power Four conference. You're still capable of doing it if you have the resources. And I thought Ed Scott sounded perfectly rational in all the things he said, and I don't expect more of him. And I don't, by the way, for me, I'm not pitting football against basketball. I'm just saying that historically the expectations of those two programs have been different. So for Memphis football to say, oh, we got more money than anyone in the group of five, that's pretty good. And that doesn't actually change what you think about Memphis football. That actually is an upgrade over what Memphis football was 20 years ago, right? Or 30 years ago.
And I fully agree. And I fully agree. John Martin wrote his article for the Daily Memphian, and he said, you know, given the resources, it's time. You got to win a championship. I fully agree with that. Because you have to have a payoff at some point. You have to have a full-on payoff. And I think this program, this football program, is viable for a Power Four conference. It has been for some time, probably the last decade, quite frankly, with the coaches and the playing and the talent and all that and the results. But, yes, I agree with the sentiment that, okay, if we're pouring these resources into football, letting basketball's expectations fall, we have to see the payoff for football. I totally agree with that sentiment as well.
All right. Well, we'll hope for the best tonight.
Yes, sir.
See you, Gabe.
All right.
Appreciate it.
He is Jeff Calkins at Jeff_Calkins on X, Daily Memphian columnist. Also hosts the Jeff Calkins Show 9 to 11 every single weekday right here at 92.9 FM ESPN. Now let's talk some NFL draft coming up next. We're closing in on an hour and a half until we hear Cam Ward's name to the top. We are an hour and 21 minutes away from round one of the NFL draft in Green Bay beginning. We do have a trade, our first draft day trade of the 2025 NFL draft. And no, it doesn't really mean all that much. The Texans traded a 2025 fifth round pick, 166 overall, and a 2027 fifth round pick to the Browns for three picks this year. The Browns have now sixth round pick, 179 overall, sixth round pick, 216th overall, and a seventh round pick, 255 overall. I don't know how that's going to work. Maybe the Texans or the Browns are trying to get some picks together, find a way to trade up. Don't know, but these are fifth and sixth round picks and seventh round picks changing hands. So it doesn't mean all that much. There is some smoke. I don't think there's going to be fire around the Browns potentially moving out of number two. I don't think that would make a whole lot of sense. I think the number one talent will be available for them at number two. I don't think it would behoove them to move out of that spot and risk losing out on Travis Hunter, who could play wide receiver, and then also a fair amount of cornerback for them. But considering what I know and the reports I've read, it seems like Cam Ward at one to the Titans is going to be true. Travis Hunter at number two to the Browns is going to be true. Now, at number three to the Giants, we're looking at Abdul Carter out of Penn State, the DN. And then at number four, this is as of today, it seems like Will Campbell out of LSU, really talented offensive tackle with short arms apparently, could be at number four. Mike Vrabel likes his interior offensive or his offensive line. He likes guys that have a decent skill set where they can move inside and play outside, and he likes building his teams from the inside out. Look at what he did with the Titans. So my assumption, Connor, and I don't know if you have the same assumption, is that the Jags at number five is where this draft, for all intents and purposes, will start. Now, there is some thoughts that they could trade out of that pick, but let's assume that they don't. There's been a lot of smoke around offense being taken with that pick. Liam Cohen has taken over, offensive coordinator coming over from the Tampa Bay Buccaneers. And his main goal, the main assumption that has been made by that front office in giving him that job, is that he's going to take over and fix Trevor Lawrence. He's going to maximize that offense, maximize Trevor Lawrence's skill set, and they can get back to where they were a couple of years ago with Doug Peterson making the playoffs, potentially winning a playoff game. The idea behind that, though, is, okay, offense. Who do they take? Do you go offensive line? Haven't needed offensive line. Do you take wide receiver? They haven't needed a wide receiver. Do you take running back? They have Travis Etienne and Tank Bigsby. So is Ashton Jeanty a nice luxury pick for you? The idea there is Tet McMillan from Arizona or Ashton Jeanty from Boise State. Out of those two guys, I think Ashton Jeanty is the one that makes sense the most. It seems like, though, there's a lot of teams that are trying to trade up to get Ashton Jeanty. And I'm going to ask you this, Connor. If you're the Chicago Bears at number 10, because this is the big rumor out there at this particular moment, would you take the opportunity with the draft assets that you've accrued over the years and try to trade up to go get a guy like Ashton Jeanty to be in your backfield? Is that something that you think you would do? Because I certainly have a take on it. I'll get yours first, though.
I think I'd think about it pretty heavily, because it does feel like if you could add somebody like Ashton Jeanty and he works out, it would be a huge, huge development for the Bears.
Helpful for Caleb Williams.
I think it would be a risk I'd be okay with.
It's a risk. It's a risk. My assumption, though, and this is why I don't really understand this rumor, even though it seems like Ryan Poles, their GM, is being very aggressive about trying to go get Ashton Jeanty. I would say stick there and take best player available, whether that be Tyler Warren, the tight end out of Penn State, or Kelvin Banks Jr., the offensive tackle from Texas. You could upgrade at tight end. You could upgrade at the left tackle position. Make that offensive line that you've been creating this offseason under year one, Ben Johnson, your new head coach. You could make it even better. If you had Kelvin Banks at left tackle, you have Joe Tooney. You brought in Drew Dahlman from the Atlanta Falcons, Jonah Jackson from the Rams. You have an all-pro or at least a Pro Bowl caliber right tackle and Darnell Wright, who you drafted a couple years ago out of Tennessee. You could definitely strengthen that. And then behind that, the next two picks that the Bears have are both in the second round, early day two, 39 and 41. I love Ashton Jeanty, Connor. I do. I think he is a tremendous talent. I think he'll be in a 1,000-yard rusher wherever he ends up in the National Football League. He really is that. He ran for 2,600 yards last year. Could have been potentially the Heisman if Travis Hunter didn't exist. But I don't think that it's worth it to trade up for a guy like that when you look at the rest of the running back class. Because think about the guys that could fall into the Bears' lap at 39 or 41. You have both the guys from Ohio State, Travion Henderson and Quinshon Judkins. And I'm a firm believer in Travion Henderson. Omarion Hampton from North Carolina, he was nearly a 2,000-yard rusher. If he falls into your lap at 39 to 41, don't think it's likely. That would be a good pick for you. But even past that, you have Caleb Johnson from Iowa. You have DJ Giddens from Kansas State. You have Devin Neal from Kansas. You just keep Damian Martinez from Miami. There's so many different running backs that the Bears can get. I don't think it would make a whole lot of sense to go full, give up your first couple of days of the draft just to get Ashton Jeanty. I don't know if there's a gap between Ashton Jeanty and the rest of the class. I don't think the gap is near as big as people are painting it right now. I don't think that gap is as large. I think this is one of the deepest running back classes we have seen in the past decade, nearly the 21st century. I think you can wait around till 39 and 41, find a useful player at number 10, and then get a running back with any other pick in the draft. I think it would be strange, but it seems like the Bears are going to try to do that. Now, the other question that we all have, Shedeur Sanders, where is he going to go? And also, is he going to be the second quarterback off the board? We know Cam Ward's going to go number one. But who is going to be the next quarterback off the board? I find this to be an interesting topic because there is now a odds shift in team that will draft Jackson Dart. And if you know anything about the New York Giants, if they're going to get Jackson Dart, it likely will have to be a trade-up scenario. In multiple mock drafts, I've seen them trading up to 18 to go get Jackson Dart. And then behind that, you have Shedeur Sanders at 21 to the Pittsburgh Steelers. The way I see it right this second, considering Shedeur Sanders and all of the things that have come out about him, and really just his skill set as a player, I think that 21 to the Pittsburgh Steelers is the most likely. But will the Giants or some other team come along, jump ahead of the Pittsburgh Steelers at 21 and take a guy like Jackson Dart? I think that's going to be an interesting thing to watch. But again, we are about an hour and 10 minutes away from night one, round one of the NFL draft in Green Bay. I'm excited to see it. We'll have so much to talk about as we get back tomorrow. But right now, let's go ahead and get to small talk, because we have some players that will be at the NFL draft walking across the stage, and they have a music selection that we need to talk about. That's next. And Small Talk is brought to you by Conway Services, reputable service available 7 days a week. Now, before we rate music taste of the NFL draft prospects, we did have the award voting come through for Defensive Player of the Year, and Evan Mobley won from the Cleveland Cavaliers. He got 35 first-place votes and 38 second-place votes, 285 points total. He edged out Dyson Daniels, who was in second, got 25 first-place votes. And he had 197 total points. Jaren Jackson Jr. actually came in seventh. He was behind Zubats, Amen Thompson, Lou Dort, Draymond Green, Dyson Daniels, and Evan Mobley. He only got 1 second-place vote and 6, I believe, third-place votes. He had a total of 9 points. The fall-off for Jaren Jackson Jr. and this Grizzlies team and how he was viewed because of that needs to be studied. That is unbelievable. He was the favorite. What, 2 months ago?
Zubac was ahead of him?
Zubac was ahead of him. That's wild.
I don't think of Zubac as defense.
But we know that the Grizzlies into the season definitely had him fall off pretty substantially.
At least Draymond didn't win. Thank God.
Now we have some prospects at the NFL draft tonight in Green Bay, and they have some walkout music that we have to rate. Tyler Booker is going to be there. He has Imaginary Players by Jay-Z. Can't necessarily go wrong with Jay-Z. I can respect that. Jihad Campbell, one of my favorites. Free promo by Lil Baby. Not familiar, but shout out. Whatever. Will Campbell, kind of lame, but also a classic right above it by Lil Wayne. I think I could get behind that. Nice little tune to walk up across the stage with. We have Mason Graham, D-tackle from Michigan, bottom by Gunna. Maxwell Harrison, him all along by Gunna. A lot of Gunna here. Ashton Jeanty, clear my reign by Gunna. Will Johnson, toast up by Gunna. Travis Hunter, let it all work out by Lil Wayne. Very good song, if you're not familiar. Jalen Milroe. This is good. Rich Homie Quan walkthrough. Rich Homie Quan, I mean, he had the Memphis football team by the cojones circa 2014. I mean, just he had an unbelievable run. Shamar Stewart, if you need more reasons not to draft him, he's going with some Drake. Forever by Drake. Forever's fine, but Drake, just stay away from the Drake, I would say, if you're gonna go ahead and walk across the stage to any songs. I think there's one, though, that takes the cake. Matthew Golden, wide receiver from Texas. This is what he's going to walk out to. Come on. A little bit of UGK? International Players Anthem? I mean, I can't imagine. This might be my pick if I ever was in this situation. This is unbelievable. Connor, what direction would you go with your music? Black Pumas?
I might have some Black Pumas rolling as I walk across the stage. I don't know. Knowing me and how nerdy I can be, I'd probably do like a music score or something. I don't know.
Well,
some of the music from Sinners goes crazy. I might have to have something in there.
I'm going to have to lock in with Matthew Golden walks across the stage because this is an unbelievable choice. Unbelievable choice. But we made an unbelievable choice to bring on Kyron Samuels next. We'll break down fact and fiction when it comes to the NFL draft on the other side.